AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. Jamie Anderson wins gold in the women's slopestyle snowboarding. She says the Sochi win is greater than the X Games.
Kind of a big deal. No, I mean, this is the event. X Games is like the biggest event of action sports, but the Olympics is like the biggest event of all sports.
Norway continues to dominate the medals race six, including two golds. The U.S. matches Norway in gold medals, but only has one other. Hannah Carney's bronze in the women's moguls. More rain for the Pacific Northwest cutting into, but not ending the drought that's gripped much of California and the region. National Weather Service meteorologist Bruce Sullivan says the big system won't do much for parched Southern California.
Unfortunately, it doesn't look like we're going to get much in the way of relief for the drought conditions across Southern California.
Utility crews continue to scramble to get the power back on in southeastern Pennsylvania.
Power has been restored to most of the hundreds of thousands who lost it, but some customers could still be out for a couple of more days. PECO serves the Philadelphia area. Spokesman Ben Armstrong.
This was the second worst storm in our company's history.
How bad was it?
Next to only Hurricane Sandy.
The trouble is,
in some cases, entire portions of our electric system needs to be completely rebuilt.
At the storm's peak, more than a million customers in Pennsylvania and Maryland lost power. I'm Carlotta Bradley.
Attorney General Eric Holder tells the Human Rights Campaign that starting tomorrow, the Justice Department will recognize same-sex marriage rights.
Our nation has made great strides on the road to LGBT equality, a cause that I believe, is a defining civil rights challenge of our time.
A spokesman for the National Organization for Marriage says Holder's decision is an attempt to further undermine the authority and the sovereignty of the states. This is AP Radio News. A son of South African President Jacob Zuma is under investigation after his Porsche collided with a minibus more than a week ago, killing a woman.
This event took place on February 1st, apparently a Saturday night, in heavy rain, according to the reports. The president's son, in his vehicle, hit a minivan, and one person in that minivan was killed. Two others were injured. The police are not confirming the names of those involved in this accident. The details of the accident coincide with the reporting.
AP's Chris Torsha in Johannesburg reports that opposition political parties say police gave Zuma's son preferential treatment at the crash site. The Obama administration eases the rules for would-be asylum seekers, refugees, and others who hope to come to the United States. The Department of Homeland Security says people thought to have been given what it calls limited support to terrorists or terrorist groups will not automatically be barred from the U.S. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
William is all too familiar with the dangers of being homeless in D.C. during the winter.
You'd be out there in the cold, you know, snowing and rain. You got to cover up, you'll freeze to death.
The threat of hypothermia and death is real for D.C.'s homeless. Your gift of just $10 right now will provide a winter rescue kit at Central Union Mission. That's warm clothes, blankets, and a hot meal. Give today at missiondc.org. That's missiondc.org.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Les Smolin, with my co-host, Colin Callahan. We have a great lineup of guests for you to on our show today. Colin, would you like to tell us who we have?
Yes. Les, we have Linda Ellis, who's the owner and CEO of Capital Concierge. We have Jim Norris, who's the president and CEO of Montgomery County Employees Federal Credit Union. We have Richard Bright, president of Bright Concepts. And finally, Deb Alderson, who is the president and CEO of Satara Defense. First up, we have Linda Ellis, owner and CEO of Capital Concierge. Linda, what is Capital Concierge?
We're a concierge company that provides concierge services in commercial office properties, high-end condominiums, apartments, retail shopping malls, and private corporations.
And how did you get involved?
I came to Capital about 15 years ago and met our founder and owner of Capital, and she was looking for somebody to run the business so she could start another one.
So you took over the business.
I literally did. She wanted somebody who understood the business. I couldn't spell concierge when I came, but I now can do that. Mm-hmm. And to run it and put some policies and procedures in place. And so it was her skills matched my skills and vice versa. So here I am 15 years later.
So you bought this company when?
In November of 2007.
And what made you think that you could be successful doing this?
Well, there's a couple of things. When I had been at the company, I knew us or thought I knew us well, and I decided when we couldn't sell the company that it'd be a good idea if I bought it.
That's a big risk.
Yes.
So what is it about you that says I'm somewhat of a risk taker, or was it not a big risk?
It wasn't a big risk because whatever you want to do, you're going to do that. You're going to be successful doing it. So if I'm going to bet on somebody, I'm going to bet on me.
And where does that confidence come from?
I think from years of failures.
What do you mean, years of failure?
Well, anything you try, when you're growing up, you know, you're riding a bike and you fall down, you get back on the bike, or you run for an office at a high school and you don't get that office, and then you figure out what you did wrong, and then you go do it again and you win. So it's trying and getting back on the bicycle to ride again.
Mm-hmm. And where did you grow up and learn that lesson?
I was born and raised in Las Vegas.
Brothers or sisters?
I have two older brothers and one younger brother.
So you're kind of packaged there in the middle somehow.
I am.
And where did you learn this falling off the bike thing? What was a lesson that maybe you had to learn when you were younger?
It comes from my dad, and he was born and raised in Belfast, came over through Ellis Island, and it was, if you have a problem, tell somebody who cares because it's not me. I'll support you, but you need to go do what you need to do. And if you try something and you fail, then you get back on and you try again, whatever that is. And he gave me the courage to do that.
Mm-hmm. And what did Dad do?
He was a butcher, meat cutter.
Mm-hmm. And did you work with him or have a chance to do anything with him that way?
I didn't work with him, but I was at his store a lot while I was growing up. He was a single father, which wasn't popular in those days. Mm. And I would walk up after school to his meat counter. And one of the things that I loved the most is he would set me up on the counter, which would not be good now. but he would cut very thick slices of bologna and a piece of cheddar cheese for me and wrap it up, and that was heaven.
Mm-hmm. That was heaven for you.
Yes, and I watched him work, and that's where I really learned about service, about helping other people.
So there's a kind of a combination theme about service, but also self-sufficiency.
Yes. Yeah. My dad always told me, you are a woman, but you will learn how to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. What did he know about the world back then that he kind of shared with her or implied in that statement that you just made?
That we're all responsible for our own lives, and we make choices, and some of those choices are going to be really good, and other choices are not going to be good, but those are our choices. My dad was very much about accountability.
Mm-hmm. And how does that show up for you today?
I think in both positive and negative ways. I do hold our employees accountable. I hold myself accountable. And it makes, I think in my management style, I'm very rigid in our standard. I expect 100% of 100% of the time. And that's hard.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, as you describe, and I think about this, you've got 400 employees, but they're concierge. So they're really in single locations.
Yes.
And you're managing really this dispersed workforce. So how do you do that?
You put policies and procedures in place, and you set expectations. I'm very clear about my expectations. And so from the time that you walk in our door to be interviewed, and we interview approximately 30 people to find one that we will bring on board, mm-hmm. and we start from the very beginning of your training talking about it is accountability, and it is how you treat other people. And so I talk a lot about, if you're the customer, are you okay with 99%, or do you want 100% of whatever you purchased?
Mm-hmm. And who instilled that in you? I mean, what was your first job where you were actually accountable when you were young?
Oh, when I was selling Brownie Scout cookies, because I had to sell more Brownie Scout cookies than anybody else, and we were accountable for the money, and we were accountable for the boxes of cookies. And
you had to sell more cookies than anyone else? Why was that important?
It was very important to me.
Because?
Yeah, I just have a lot of drive. I mean, it's not, I think what really drives me is that I compete heavily against myself.
Mm. Why is that?
I want to grow. I mean, this whole life that we're given is about growing and learning and stretching beyond our boundaries and trying new things. And if you fail, great, you've got a great lesson that you can learn or take from and learn. But I've always found, and one of my mentors actually told me, he said, once you learn to manage through something, you have just learned to manage through that.
And who was a mentor maybe that you were just thinking of?
That was Jack Gottsman.
And what role did Jack play in your life?
He was actually my first CEO when I grew up and got big, if you will. Mm-hmm. And he held us very accountable, Irish as well. But he supported unconditionally. And so I learned a lot from him because he took the time to mentor me. I was in a very male-oriented business. Many times I was the only woman in a room of 50.
What was that like?
It was hard.
Uh-huh. To some of the young women who might be listening today, what are some things you took away from that?
I think one of the things that I took away is that you can do whatever you want to do. You have to learn the game. Mm-hmm. You have to play from the inside. You can't play from the outside. And I will tell all of those young ladies listening that you can play the victim and feel sorry for yourself, or you can do better and prove everybody wrong.
Mm-hmm. Were you in a position to kind of wear the, I don't want to call it a mask, but the cape of the victim when you were younger?
No.
Yeah.
I mean,
never saw yourself like that?
No. No, because so, I don't feel sorry for myself very often. Not everything feels good.
Yeah, and you learned that from your dad.
I learned that from my dad.
Yeah, just keep going.
It's the Irish martyr syndrome.
For those of us not familiar with it, what do you mean the Irish martyr syndrome?
Well, if you have a problem, then go tell somebody who cares, because it's not me. It's mm-hmm. no, your problems are your problems. They're not somebody else's
mm-hmm.
problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's picking yourself up by the bootstraps.
Exactly.
What was the biggest surprise you had after you became the owner? So you went through and you decided to buy it and buy it on your own. What was the biggest surprise you had the day all of a sudden you were completely in charge?
It's a really good question, because this is my third company that I've owned.
Uh-huh.
And I remember that night very well. My family took me out to dinner to a very nice restaurant after Mary announced that I had purchased a company, after we had our big conference call with our employees. And that night when I laid in bed, I thought, oh, no, I really own this company. And it was a surprise to me, because it was my third company. And I realized how serious I took that I was now responsible for the 212 lives mm-hmm. of our employees.
Yeah. And you've grown it to 400.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was going to just play off that theme, the being responsible theme. Where does that come from?
I think it comes from my dad. I mean, I think it's in my DNA because it was in his. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember a moment in my life that I wasn't held accountable for my actions. Mm-hmm. He used to have a favorite saying, when you made that decision, Linda, who had the gun at your head?
Interesting. How young were you when you first had that?
I was 5 or 6.
5 years old.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Wow. Well, in first grade, I played hooky. And I was really scared. I hid behind, in our neighbor's yard and behind a cinder block fence and waited until all the other kids came home. And then I went home and thinking my dad would never know. And when he asked me what I'd been doing that day, I said, well, I learned a lot. And he said, did you learn not to hide behind the fence? And I said, yes. And he said, why did you do that? And I don't know why. To this day, I don't know why I did that. And he said, well, you need to understand that you're accountable for all of your decisions, not just some of them.
Not just the ones you like.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. What about Mom?
She actually was a non-working or a stay-at-home mom until I was 5. And when I was 5, she actually left my dad and me and took my brothers and went somewhere else.
Was that difficult for you?
Very.
And how does that affect you? How did it affect you then, and how does it show up for you today in how you lead?
It was really hard for me because I didn't understand when you're 5. Actually came back for a few months and left for good when I was almost 7. And you don't understand as a 7-year-old or a 5-year-old. But I know now what that feeling of leaving is. And so even when we when we're forced to terminate somebody, I believe people fire themselves. Mm-hmm. We have to do that with respect, and they have to walk out the door feeling good about that experience.
Appreciate you sharing that. What's the website address?
www.capitalconcierge.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Linda Ellis, owner and CEO of Capital Concierge. I'd like to thank my co-host, Colin Callahan, for helping with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
And your name is?
Dana Theus with EmpowerCoaching.com.
And what makes EmpowerCoaching.com special?
Well, we help mid-level and senior leaders turn professional success into personal development.
Tell me more about that. What do you mean?
Well, today, leaders to succeed at any level need to master soft skills. They need mm-hmm. to be able to manage and lead people at all levels, and that means they have to get along with people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they also need to master the process of learning to get along with people, and that's mm-hmm. what we support them to do.
And you're supporting who to work better or to do what?
Well, for example, a professional who aspires to be in a senior leadership position mm-hmm. needs to be able to negotiate their relationships mm-hmm. with their staff, with mm-hmm. their superior, with their mm-hmm. peers. Mm-hmm. They need to communicate confidently in all kinds of formats, mm-hmm. you know, one-on-one and in meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And we give them the resources to learn to do that and then be better at it.
And these resources are both one-on-one as well as online?
Yeah, we have a lot of programs online because mm-hmm. this kind of support is usually cost prohibitive, and we mm-hmm. make it very affordable by providing a lot of online resources as well mm-hmm. as personal support.
How can I learn more about what you're offering and get in contact with you? Is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com. Mm-hmm.
All right, excellent. And your name again is?
Dana Theus.
This has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Les Smolin, with my co-host, Colin Callahan. Up next, we have Jim Norris, President and CEO of Montgomery County Employees Federal Credit Union. Jim, what is Montgomery County Employees Federal Credit Union?
Well, thanks for having me here today. I really appreciate it. And our credit union provides financial services to the employees of Montgomery County and also the Montgomery County public school employees, and we also offer our services to several other groups.
And how big or small is it?
So we're approaching $100 million in assets. We're very excited about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And been around for how long, the association?
So it's been around since 1968. and a group of Montgomery County employees actually founded the credit union in the personnel department over at the county.
Mm-hmm. And how did you become president and CEO?
So I interviewed for the position, and interviews really excite me. I really love to prepare. I like to find out all I can about the company, and that's what I did. In this case, I prepared. I had a vision. I came in, and the board interviewed me, and I not only had the vision, but I had steps of how I was, you know, planning to get there.
So how did preparation become so important in you, what you do and what you bring to the table?
Just, you know, I think to be proactive. I always like to be proactive and, you know, putting together the pieces of the puzzle. And, you know, it's really because of the vision. So I'm always thinking, okay, what steps do I need to get to get there?
Mm-hmm. How young were you when you first started preparing for things like that deep preparation and curiosity?
Gosh, that was probably when I was about 12 years old, you know, paper routes and you know, doing all kind of things. I was never, you know, one to kind of sit around. I needed to be out, be doing something. So, you know.
I mean, nobody was making you do that.
Nobody was making me do it. You know, get out, get the paper route, not only the paper route, but, you know, interacting with the customers and, you know, how can I do things better for those folks.
You were doing that at 12?
12.
What did you learn at 12 that is still with you about how you go about your business today?
I think it's really about the interaction and the small things, that the small steps you take can really amount to a huge difference in the long run. Mm-hmm.
You also told us about taking stuff apart as a kid.
Love it.
What resonates for me about that is that you see things as a system. That's true about cars. And how's that true for organizations?
Everything's a system. Everything that we do is a system, and everything is an interaction. So there's so many cogs that run a system. And you know, I think the way I look at things is I like to take them apart so I can put them back together and be better, more efficient, more effective.
Where did you learn to do that? What's the first thing you took apart and tried to put back together?
Gosh, first thing that I took apart was a really old TV, had a remote control, and it was a mechanical remote control. I was like, I need to figure out how this thing works.
You needed to figure that out.
I was like, how does it work? Uh-huh. What makes it go?
Where's that curiosity come from?
You know, I don't know. I just... It's fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm. It feels like a real passion that whole
it is,
system.
It's a passion. You're right about mm-hmm. that, and you know, I enjoy it.
So, where did you grow up?
So, I grew up in Baltimore, mm-hmm. Maryland.
And how many brothers and sisters?
Got seven of us.
Wow! And yes. You are the oldest boy.
So I'm the oldest boy. In the middle. Yes, right. I've got two older sisters.
What was that like?
It was great. Those my sisters are crazy. They're fun. you know, we always are together. We're just great friends. And
I suppose there's a certain amount of system dynamics in growing up in a family that big. So not just our things systems, but
yeah, it's dynamics. Interesting that you should mention that. When we moved, and there was a dishwasher in our house, and it broke early on. My parents didn't get it fixed. And
what did you do with it?
They wouldn't let me touch it. They said, "There's, you know, that's actually where our snacks were. All the different, you know, boxes of snacks actually ended up in the dishwasher." Uh-huh. But we had a system actually where one of the kids would clear the table, one would, you know, wash the dishes, the other would dry the dishes, the other would put them away. Uh-huh. So everything had a system.
Right. So you saw it right early on, how to organize people to get stuff going.
I hadn't thought about that for years. You just brought that to my attention.
Were there other things like that growing up?
There's always a system. Mm-hmm. Coming in at night, you know, we had a sign-in list. So whoever was the last one to sign in, they're the ones that locked up the house. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, just another example
of a system.
So it's
kind of all over the place. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that, why is, what's the need in you that actually compels that?
Well, I think it's, you know, like I mentioned the vision.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have this vision.
I'm thinking about, even when you're younger, What is it that happened to you, whether it was maybe your first paying job or something else, that said this is important?
I think it was really maybe about the input from other people. You know, when, you know, something, you know, got fixed or was gleaming like new, it was the input of other people that really kind of motivates me. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, wow, that's really cool. You know, I want to, you know, how did you do that? Oh, I did that. Boom, boom, boom.
I mean, you described a situation earlier where there's the kids are all sitting around the dinner table, and this is where it happens. You're one of seven eventually. and I'm trying to figure out, so is this curiosity, this need to understand how things work and an interest in kind of putting your hands into it, getting, you know, as we say, rolling up the sleeves and getting dirty, does that come from being around the table and being that one of seven, or does it come from someplace else?
I think maybe it does come from being, you know, one of seven. We all have to work. You know, we just can't sit around. We have to work to, you know, get the house in order, etc. So we always had a job to do.
So who was the one who was maintaining the order in the house for those kinds of things?
Oh, that's Dad.
That was Dad?
Dad was the order guy. Yeah. Yes.
What did Dad do?
He scared us. He scared us. But he was very caring, and but he was the order guy, and Mom was the okay, let's make it better, you know, person.
So. In your business today, as you're running the credit union, are you more like your mom or your dad in your leadership style?
Yeah, it's a mix, but I would say that I'm more my mom.
Uh-huh.
Because I like to have fun. I like to be passionate about something. I like for folks to be interested in what they're doing
and make it better.
So I always have to kind of make it fun.
Uh-huh.
And that I think that attracts people.
How young were you when you first had a leadership position in a credit union?
So I was 22 years old. I was just coming out
22.
Of 22. Yeah, 22. I was just coming out of University of Maryland. I had just graduated, didn't have a job, and I didn't even know what a credit union was.
Uh-huh.
But there was an opportunity, and I took it. And here I am 33 years later.
What did they see in you back then?
I think they saw a guy that liked to take things apart and didn't have fear. No fear. The opportunity, the credit union had some challenges. And they felt that I was up for those challenges.
But you're 22 years old or thereabouts. You don't have a whole lot of work experience behind you?
No.
That's a big risk for an institution to take that's not in the business of taking huge risks.
That is very true. That is very true. They saw something, and I didn't let them down. I took over, and right from the get-go, I worked to, you know, turn things around.
What was the biggest surprise? All of a sudden, you're in charge of people and their paychecks and that kind of thing. What was the biggest surprise running the business?
Well, the biggest surprise was really all the paperwork that had to be done. Uh-huh. And the regulatory burdens. So that was really some of the issues. Within my first month, I had the NCUA regulator come in, and here I am, 22 years old.
Yeah,
I had no idea, and we had to go through a regulatory exam.
What did you draw upon from your childhood that enabled you to kind of get through that process?
Let's see. Let me think about that one. I think it was get the job done. We need to, no excuses. I think that was one of Dad's things, like, look, just get it done. And I needed to get it done, whatever it took, whether it was calling on other folks that knew more than I did. I needed to make it happen. And that was, again, you know, here's the vision. Now I need to make it go.
Did you learn anything about yourself in the process there that maybe surprised you, that you still rely upon today?
It was really, I think the one thing that I found was is relying on other folks and making them part of the process. Mm-hmm. And really motivating them and drawing on their experiences, and I still do that. Everyone has so much to offer, and I really take advantage of everybody's input.
Is that the way it was around the dinner table? Everybody has something to contribute?
Everyone had something to contribute, and Mom and Dad listened.
And getting the dishes washed.
Yeah, exactly. Part of that system.
Got to be done. is there anything for you, as you look at the role that you're playing today, anything that to you kind of represents the next big challenge for you?
That's a great question, and I think the next big challenge is things are moving so fast. The internet, the mobile, and it's really trying to keep up with what's the next greatest thing that's going to happen. And, you know, I don't want to end up as a blockbuster. So, you know, we need to really keep up and make sure that we're hitting on that next big thing.
That's great. What's the website?
So the website is mcefcu.org.
Thank you, Jim. We've been speaking with Jim Norris, President and CEO of Montgomery County Employees Federal Credit Union. I'd like to thank my co-host, Colin Callahan, for helping with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this Business Spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. Isabella, what is BusinessWise CPAs?
BusinessWise CPA supports government contractors, small businesses, and nonprofits with outsourced CFO and financial consulting services.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the marketing director.
And as a marketing director, what does that mean?
Well, I actually wear several hats. My primary role is to improve and extend the branding of BusinessWise CPA through referrals, client meetings, networking in the D.C. area, mm-hmm. As well as supporting current client relationships.
And what do you like most about your job?
I like the most that I don't have to be at a desk all day. I'm out and about meeting new folks and learning experiences from other entrepreneurs.
Great. What makes your organization so special in your view?
I believe our added value is that we are not just a number report kind of type firm. We're very much integrated with our clients. They rely on us for all important decisions. We help them not only with the numbers, but on the future growth of the business.
And what is it that the clients appreciate most about the company?
That they can call us and they talk to the same person every time.
Okay, and who's the perfect client?
Perfect client is small to mid-size organization looking to save on a full-time employee and as well as get the added value of the consulting.
Great. What's the website for the company?
www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Les Smolin, with my co-host, Colin Callahan. For this segment, we have Richard Bright, president of Bright Concepts, Inc. Richard, what is Bright Concepts?
Yeah, we are a full-service association management company and a virtual sales organization for other trade associations and for-profit companies.
And how did you get started with the company?
Founded the company back in 97, and I started my career here in 91 coming from the UK and fell into an organization called the Young Entrepreneurs Organization, and I was their sales and marketing director for 5 years, sort of plateaued my career there, and went out in 97 and created Bright Concepts, a consulting organization, and built it up from there.
What was the reason for starting it? I mean, probably could have stayed comfortable in a job.
You know, when you're a part of a young entrepreneurs organization, there's a lot of entrepreneurs, and you see them doing their own thing. I really wanted to do my own thing, and, you know, I felt that I could always do it, so, and quite frankly, always wanted to do my, set up my own business, so it was a perfect opportunity.
What do you mean you always wanted to set up your own business?
I'd always been driven to do my own thing. I'd always been driven to be successful, and I always looked at things and felt that I could maybe do things better myself. So from an early age, always went out, started, you know, work. It wasn't necessarily asked by my parents to go out and get a job at a very early age, but always was trying to do so.
If you recall.
Did a paperboy round in the UK probably when I was 12 or 13. Uh-huh. And then,
What did you learn from that? From a business thing that you still carry forward?
Just, you know, you work hard, you get rewarded. You know, you get a job, you turn up, you work, you do what you're supposed to, and you get paid, and then you've got the freedom to be able to do what you will with that money, especially at a young age.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Was that important for you growing up? This theme of independence and doing what you will.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. I always... you know, I had a lot of friends. I played a lot of sport, but I also liked my own time as well to be able to do my own thing and you know, get my own results.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything about the paper route that you learned in terms of like tips? And I mean, you got tips. What did you do to get the tips and that you still carry forward with you?
You know, I'm not sure. I learned that it can be a miserable existence in the England in the rain delivering papers in an early morning. But other than that, you know, I had a good. It was a good local news agent, a good boss. You know, they did what they promised. So.
And what did you learn about yourself? I mean, you could have been inside dry. What did you learn about yourself at that point?
You know, I learned that. You know, if you set out to do something, you can go do it. If you want, you know, you've got to put yourself in places that are not always comfortable to you to be able to succeed. And I wasn't afraid to do so. So I suppose that's one lesson.
And how old were you when you came to the United States?
I was about 25 when I came to the United States, if my math is correct, at 91, coming in at 91.
So that was another kind of going out on your own and doing your own thing.
Well, I'd done that before. My brother, many, many years ago, left the UK and went and worked on the cruise ship. So he had left and he had done his own thing, traveled, and had a great time. I had gone to Australia when I was 21. Originally, a few of my friends were going to come with me. And they decided last minute they didn't want to go. And so I ended up spending just over a year in Australia working, you know, pretty much in every place around Australia.
Were you following in your brother's footsteps there?
Maybe a little bit, but I always, you know, I'd worked hard in the UK, and I was basically one of the top sales folks for Mercantile Credit at the time. Mm-hmm. And Mercantile Credit sort of backed out of the finance industry that we're in. So I found myself saying, you know what, let's go and take a year out, do a sabbatical, and that's what I ended up doing. So
you've got this adventurous streak in you as well, it sounds like.
I like adventure, I like travel, I like new things, I like meeting new people, and I've got a thirst for that, I think. Mm-hmm.
Where does that thirst come from?
You know, all of my family, my parents.
This is mom and dad.
Dad, and my siblings, my brother and sister. We always used to travel. We always used to meet people. We've always been outgoing personalities. So I think we've learnt more, quite frankly, meeting people and working and being traveling. And then we have necessarily in the classroom, even though, you know, education is critical. Yeah. So I suppose probably from my childhood it stems from.
Mm. What were your mom and dad doing when you were growing up?
My dad was successful. He was senior level manager or general manager of a rather large wholesaler called Macro, similar to Costco. Uh-huh. Over here. And my mom was just a great mom. She was looking after the kids and made sure we did what we did. And quite frankly, if it was my mom made us do what we needed to do. What
did you learn from your dad that shows up in your leadership and management style now?
My dad was a hard worker, so I put a lot of hours in. He taught me ethics. Hard work and ethics, and that we all have the ability to succeed, but as long as you put the effort into it, I think
was,
is what he
was. Was there something that happened when you were younger that you witnessed or experienced with your dad that kind of translated into that?
Maybe what I didn't see as well. So, for example, you know, he would always leave early in the morning. He would always come home late. I had work at weekends, so when he was home, he was working. But he also traveled a lot. So, you know, he was gone a lot as well. So from not seeing him, I knew he was working. So so a little bit of both, I think, was what I learned.
And what about Mom? What was she doing?
Our mom was always there, always helping us with schoolwork, you know, looking after the house, meals, laundry, getting us the sporting.
Kept the order.
Oh, she kept the order all right, yeah. she was good. But she was outgoing, funny, and still is. They're both alive. So,
is that something that is there something in your leadership style that you can attribute to your mom, that you learned that from your mom?
Yeah, I think I learned something from both of them. I think from my mother, real sense of humor and more of my creative streak, quite frankly.
What do you mean? Sales is creative?
Well, there's marketing, too. Absolutely, you've got to be creative in sales, too. But I think I learned more of my marketing and my sort of being able to dream a little bit, I think, from my mother. And my dad, it was more, okay, we're going to do this, we're going to get it done, and, you know, off you go do it. So
this dreaming thing sounds like not work, but truly, how does that actually manifest itself in work for you?
Oh, I'm a very visionary, not in the sense of, a very visual person, in the sense of I set goals for myself and my staff, but my personal goals very much are, they're visual in my mind of where I need to go, and so very much I dream about one point in the future and how I'm going to get there. So I think that relates in the sense of goal setting and wanting to meet those goals.
Where does the confidence come in that? Because you can have the goals, but how do you know? What assurance do you have that you'll actually even be successful?
You know, over the years, I've been successful. I've also had failures as well, but I've always been competitive. And early on in life, I was winning, you know, sprint races in my school team. I played for good soccer teams. So early on, I was finding through sport I was being successful. Mm-hmm. But I also think that there's a little bit of paranoia as well that goes in with entrepreneurship, in the sense that you keep driving because you always think you need to be doing more,
right?
Because you're afraid of not being successful. So there's a little bit of both, I think.
Do you have kids or married? Or?
Married 18 years, and I've got one child, Jack, who is 14 years of age.
Mm-hmm. How is being a parent like being a CEO?
It balances is tough. So, you know, started the business in 97. It took a while to really build to the level that it is now and to find the right people. So we've had benefits from the business in the sense that my wife has traveled with the business. Obviously, it's a livelihood.
Yeah.
But it's tough to be able to balance. I do a lot of traveling. I'm out of the house a lot. I can't commit to coaching teams because I just don't know whether I'm going to be there for the games.
Right.
So it's tough. It's very hard.
You're constantly moving. That's the theme that comes around in a lot of your conversations and stories.
Yeah, I like to be on the go. I like to be moving. I like to be constantly thinking. And it's a blessing, but it's also a curse at the same time because I can't. You know, my wife says I'm a stress bucket. So I'm very it's hard to to just relax in some areas, but that's what I've always done.
Aside from mom and dad, did you have other mentors along the way that helped shape you?
You know, there's no one person that stands to mind. It's more a series of people and series of circumstances.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, my father obviously was a huge, huge influence. My brother I always looked up to, even though as kids we were very competitive, and he didn't want to deal with me and vice versa. But just, I think, traveling, I met some really talented people in Australia.
Yeah.
And through the Young Entrepreneurs Organization, I had so many leaders there and so many examples of success that how can anybody not look up to them?
So if we had your dad in the room and he were sitting right here, what would he have to say about you and your success?
You know, it's interesting. He always used to joke about me being a budding entrepreneur and not an entrepreneur. And and it used to drive me nuts. So I think now he would say that we are an entrepreneur. I am an entrepreneur. We're doing well. We're making a difference. We're hiring people. We're doing all the things that we should be. So I think he'd be proud. Or at least I hope so.
Yeah. Thank you. What's the website address, Richard?
Brightconcepts.net is the best place to reach me.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Richard Bright, president of Bright Concepts, Inc. I'd like to thank my co-host, Colin Callahan, for helping with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this business spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Cassie Self, Marketing Manager, Buchanan & Edwards. Cassie, what is Buchanan & Edwards?
We are an IT consulting firm, and we are committed to bringing innovation and efficiency to our federal clients.
And what's your role in the company?
My role in the company is leading both the internal and external marketing and communications initiatives, and really connecting our employees with our executives and our management team, but then also, you know, relaying our messages to our customers.
And what do you like most about your job?
The people.
What is it about the people that makes them special?
Everybody at the company has a certain level of excitement, and you really see their passion for helping our clients.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think your clients appreciate about the company?
I think that our clients, first, they appreciate our quality. All of our employees are really committed to helping our clients improve their business functions and bringing that level of quality.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about your work?
I would say the people again. The people that I interact with every day, and the team that I work with, and being able to share our message and our solution with our clients.
That's great. Who do you think is the perfect kind of client for Buchanan Edwards?
An organization that an organization that has a lot of processes set in place that could be improved with technology, by bringing efficiency and automating a lot of stuff.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.buchanan-edwards.com.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Cassie Self, Marketing Manager at Buchanan & Edwards. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Les Smolin, with my co-host, Colin Callahan. For this segment, we've got Deb Alderson, President and CEO of Sotera Defense. Welcome, Deb. And what is Sotera?
Sotera is a mid-tier solutions provider for the federal government. We specialize in data analytics, data fusion, cyber security, cloud computing, just a couple of examples.
And how did you get involved?
Well, I was approached early in 13 to join the Sotera team, and actually joined as a CEO in June of 2013.
Mm-hmm. And how big or small is the company?
We're about 1,300 employees.
That's a fairly sizable organization.
Yeah.
And what is it about you that you bring that you uniquely bring that, is your contribution to the organization? What would you say?
Well, I know Sotera was looking for a leader who was focused on growth. Growth not for top line and bottom line, but more for creating opportunities for the people. I have a proven track record doing that. I've been in the industry for close to 30 years, and I understand and appreciate the mission and the importance of people in driving the mission.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you have this reputation for driving growth. Mm-hmm. Where does that come from?
Just actually my experience. I've been in the industry as a support contractor for the federal government since I got out of graduate school, and quickly, again, with this passion for serving the military, serving the mission, got excited about it, got excited about this was my way to serve, and learned early on I could actually grow the business with that passion.
So where does this urge, need, mission, passion for serving come from?
I'm not sure the serving came from some of the things that were my foundation. The passion definitely to grow and drive growth came at an early age when I was younger, just more to have that opportunity to to put myself and my family in a position where we could take care of ourselves and take care of others.
Mm-hmm. So when you say taking care, what was going on when you were younger that this kind of manifests itself?
Right. Well, I was put in a situation early in life where my mother was a widow with three children. I was 8 years old when that happened, and I'm the oldest.
The oldest of how many?
Of three. All girls.
All girls.
All women, even girl dogs. We we kept it simple. But at that age, and my mom is only 16 years older than I am, by the way, Pat wow. Petrovic. She's mm-hmm. a rock star. I was eight. She was not much older than that, and we were partners, actually, at time and trying to make sure we were doing the best we could to take care of the family.
Yeah, you mentioned in the green room that you helped do the bills and that sort of thing. So
right.
you were kind of the CFO of the family by the yeah. time you were eight.
Yeah, exactly. Now, my mom, you know, I don't want to downplay that, yeah. was definitely the adult in charge.
Yes.
And did a wonderful job raising us with limited resources at that time. But she taught me at an early age, you know, just how important it was to be accountable, be responsible. But most importantly, when we were, you know, confronted with what could be perceived as very adverse situations,
sure.
she didn't let me get negative and always reminded me that, you know, people were good, even though at some times in my life it didn't appear they were mm-hmm. that good.
Where did that come from for her? Where did she find that? I mean, she could yeah. have actually looked at it the other way as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, she could have been very, very negative. But I think my mom just, again, at a very young age, mastered being a mom. And really thought it was important to let us grow and learn and judge on our own mm-hmm. without her influencing that.
You mean, under ordinary circumstances, you might not necessarily have to circle the wagons.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How did she turn what befell the family at that point in time, very tragic,
well, she,
into something positive?
Well, you rallied. First, she was, like, incredible. And she lived for us. So even though maybe we didn't have a lot, she taught us the importance of behaving well, manners. She invested in how we looked. That was her priority, and that we were good. And even when we didn't have a lot, she always helped others. So we always brought people into our home over the holidays if they didn't have anything, and she would actually do Christmas piles from Santa for them,
wow.
even though perhaps we had hardly enough to do it for ourselves.
Did you see this as a mm-hmm. devastating event, or this sounds like it just yeah. reshaped the way you saw the world?
Yeah, you kind of go into shock a little bit because you're nervous and you're scared. But as I reflect back, it just made me stronger, and the bond I have with my mother is, like, incredible, mm-hmm. absolutely incredible.
And how does what was the takeaway that you what was the lesson you took away from that, and how does that show up for yeah. you today?
I think I'm definitely a survivor. So and I also learned that no matter how bad you may think things are, somebody's got it worse, mm-hmm. and you can actually help them, even when you're down.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
So what do you bring in your leadership style, in particular, that you got from your mom?
My mom she stresses to this day the importance of people,
uh-huh.
And keeping people first, and you know the adage that you know you're going to be treated like. You want to be treated like you expect other people to treat you. And it's just funny. She just doesn't give up on that, even to this day. And we've all gone through some fairly traumatic things in my family, and she just reminds me all the time of the importance in people, of people, and to treat them with dignity and respect. And that's what I do every day in my job.
Mm-hmm. So your dad died when you were 8 years old. Mm-hmm. What did you learn from your dad?
Very little, actually, and I don't mean to sound that negatively, but they had actually split up, and she had remarried. And unfortunately, my dad died, and then 4 months later, my stepfather died.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot to move through.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. But she did it, and with class and elegance.
Mm-hmm. What was the first job you had?
I was a
paying job.
Paying job, yes. My mother did make us clean the house all the time. I was a waitress at Smithfield Barbecue House, all you can eat barbecue and fried chicken,
and
in Norfolk, Virginia.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And how old were you when you were doing this?
15.
15 years old. What did you do with the money?
I saved it and saved it and saved it because we, you know, back then, if you wanted something nice, my mom did the best she could to help us,
right.
but you'd go lay it away. So if I saw a pretty sweater, I'd lay it away and then, you know, pay on it. So make sure that I had the clothes I wanted when school started in the fall.
Are you still a saver?
Yes, I am. Yes, very much. And I do it for my children now.
So. How old are your kids?
I have a son, 29, Billy, and his wife, Dana. I will be a grandmother in April, so I'm very excited about that. And then a younger son, John, who's 25.
And when, I don't know if you have a chance to ask these questions, mm-hmm. but what would they say about you that they admire most that actually does show up in the way you kind of lead people or engage people?
I think they'd say that I am a survivor and I'm strong.
So they get this notion of strength from you.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And I get it back from them, by the way.
How so?
Well, just any time that I'm confronted with a challenge, and I've had some in my career, I learned very quickly that the support of my family and friends made me even stronger.
So it really sounds like family is this nuclear cell that through all of the things that life kind of hands us, you kind of rely on to kind of get you through things.
Oh, definitely. And they've been there again just over about 3 years ago, had an event in my career, and the first person to reach out to me was my son and then my mother. My husband was out of town. He was there. I didn't mean to slight him.
Yes, of course. There's a theme here that I'm hearing, too, in business about growth, but about the people. Right. There's a balance piece there. Where did the balance come, and what lessons did you learn in particular?
Well, I think I kind of had to balance things because I was very, very driven at a young age. Uh-huh. I was somewhat controlling because of just what I knew about the circumstances with our family, and I was worried at a young age about taking care of our family and supporting my mother. And that I took that into college and graduate school and then into my first job, and I found that I was losing that balance when I had my son, Billy. Mm-hmm. I was working 24/7, and it was actually my mom who came to my office and pulled me out of a meeting and reminded me the importance of balance.
She pulled you out of a meeting?
Out of a meeting, yes. And she's not real big.
But she's got...
Powerful.
She's got something going. There.
She does, she does. I listen to my mother.
So then how did the balance show up after that?
She really forced me to reflect, and she just looked at me and she said, "You're going to come home, and your baby's going to be grown, mm-hmm. and you're going to miss it." And I think about that every day.
Yeah. So she really put it in perspective.
She really did. She really did.
Something that we were talking about earlier, but I didn't give you a chance to answer, so now's your opportunity. You seem to be responsible in taking care of everybody else and everything else. Mm-hmm. Who takes care of you?
I am very blessed with a wonderful husband. His name is Dick Alderson, and he's my rock, actually. And it's funny, when I met him, my mother actually said he was the only person who could control me. So he's there.
Did the handoff.
Yeah, exactly. So no, he's very, very supportive.
Anything that he might say about you that maybe our audience would be interested in knowing?
No, he would agree I'm fairly driven, a little, very type A, mm-hmm. And he would wish I could relax a little bit more, but I think he's proud of what I've accomplished, and I'm certainly proud of him.
Great. What's the website address?
It's www.soteradefense.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Deb Alderson, President and CEO of Sotera Defense. We've had a great lineup of guests on our show today. Colin, would you run through it real quickly?
Sure. First, we had Linda Ellis, owner and CEO of Capital Concierge. Then we had Jim Norris, who's president and CEO of Montgomery County Employees Federal Credit Union. And Richard Bright, then president of Bright Concepts. And then we finished up with Deb Alderson, president and CEO of Sotera Defense.
Thanks. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Colin Callahan and Mark. Mark, what was your last name?
Cohen
of Opti4, for helping with the interview, hopefully delivering to our listening audience an entertaining and educational show. And I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. You can also hear this program again at businesstalkradio.net. Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for